Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. With us in the studios of CBS Interactive, my co-host, Mumbrella Deputy Editor Robin Hicks.
Hello, Tim.
And podcast producer Alice Terlikovsky.
Hi, Tim.
And our guest is News Magazine's Alastair McEwen.
Hi, Tim. Hi, Robin. Hi, Alice.
This week,
could it be MasterChef overtaken by Australia's Got Talent?
SBS changes its digital advertising approach, geographically speaking.
Speed hump, Thirsty Camel's hump campaign ban.
Maxim exposure for new men's mag in Oz.
Yet more changes at Fairfax.
I'm now going to tell you that you are now under arrest, okay? In relation to the receiving of unlawfully obtained property.
Private parts, Facebook, and stealing content. So, Alastair McEwen, National Group Advertising Director for Newspaper Inserted Mags, which is quite the title. Welcome along. Now, one of the things we're going to chat about briefly is the new national rate structure for newspapers. But before we get into that, you're relatively new into the Australian market. What are your first impressions?
Well, yeah, thanks, Tim. I've been down here for 4 months. Came from the UK. I was previously the International Advertising Director for the New York Times, kind of based in London and New York. But I'm married to an Australian, a Brisbane girl, and delighted to be down here. And of course, it's a question I get asked quite often. You know, how does Australia as a media market compare to other markets around the world? And, you know, my first observations are that it is different. It's a whole lot better.
Well, I guess for someone coming out of the London market, the short answer is it's not screwed.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, look, you know, London has certainly got its idiosyncrasies and it's a pretty tough market. But, you know, my first impressions of the Australian media market and predominantly the Sydney market, where I've been concentrating most of my time so far, is that it's a really open, creative market. People are very open-minded to come up with great ideas. It's obviously a hard trading market. It's a very advanced market, and particularly in sort of emerging technologies. And I think that's a very exciting part of the future for Australian media.
I think one of the things people often sort of comment when, particularly when they come out of the London market, is maybe their media agencies had slightly more the upper hand when it came to the trading conversation. You know, they could generally bang the table and get rates down or you know, whatever it was. Whereas here, I think maybe the relationship is a bit more balanced. Is that a fair observation?
I think
you feel
is.
Like you've got a bit more power here.
I think it's just a more mature kind of conversation over here. It's I wouldn't characterise it as having more power. I think it's about having a spirit of cooperation and openness, which is really, really refreshing. And I'm certainly enjoying those conversations. And of course, you know, it seems like half the London media market's over here anyway. So
they are, yes.
I think everyone's changing their ways.
It's a rare thing when we hear an Australian accent on this podcast, unfortunately. What agenda have you come in with?
Look, the first few months into the business has really been about observing the market, where it's at, and how our business is positioned within that market. And, you know, getting across the whole News Limited network and understanding how our different assets are positioned has been, a really interesting journey for me personally. As a business, we've got 6 titles within our group, the newspaper inserted magazines. That includes Wish, The Weekend Australia magazine, Sunday Times, Q Weekend, Sunday Magazine, and of course, the Adelaide magazine down in South Australia. And really, I've been very taken by the fact that, you know, together, collectively, those magazines form a significant powerful base of media consumption right across Australia. You know, our readership represents 5 million plus readers every single weekend. And of course, we weren't really capitalising on that. So the first thing we're doing is really repositioning the group as an umbrella portfolio structure and going back out into market, making sure everyone understands, you know, what that means to be able to reach 1 in 3 Australians aged 14 and above every weekend.
And that's what you really come into the market with this week, to talk about this new national rate structure. What are the key benefits for agents? Is it just convenient, you know, pick up the phone, talk to one person, job done?
Certainly convenience has been a key driver for us, because I think, the market is incredibly complex these days. We as an industry, as a media industry, have sort of created this multi-headed monster in some ways. And, you know, we understand that our agencies need to have it simple from us. So we've kind of changed our organisational structure. We've streamlined all of our markets now into a single single rep per agency for the portfolio. That's the simplest thing we can do first up.
And is each rep only looking after one agency? Or?
Correct, yeah, that's right. So one rep per agency, they can talk for all the titles, which was not the case before. We had reps across different magazines. And of course, that makes life a little bit more complicated. We've then really sort of underpinned that with a new national rate card, which overlays on top of the individual rate structures for the magazines, but really bundles up a series of magazine packages into one simple to buy easy rate. And of course, with that, we're able to drive significant value added benefits to our advertisers as well.
So is it literally just not possible to make a national buy before without having to kind of make individual arrangements with it, with each of the titles?
Well, that was pretty much the case, yeah. I mean, of course, we could, of course, bring all these different titles together and package them up, but it was a lot more complex to do that. It tied up resources both in agencies and, of course, across our company as well. So this new structure is really going to allow us to simplify it for our agencies, and with that, of course, you know, simplify all the billing and invoicing processes as well, which I think is an important part of the business.
And again, one of the messages you're giving is the fact that this is all taking place at weekends. That's when these are reaching the
well that's the absolutely right. That's really what our magazines are all about. It's about that weekend readership. And of course, with this whole process as well, we've been looking at what weekend magazines really mean to Australian consumers. And of course, it really is about the weekend headspace. The weekend headspace represents a really liberated moment in time. And of course, with that freedom at the weekend, your level of engagement rises, the absorption of the content and the advertising rises. And we think that really drives a very effective advertising program for our different clients.
Does this, for instance, though, demand that actually to get the most out, advertisers should be tailoring the advertising, you know, more towards long copy, for instance?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that advertisers generally can benefit when they tailor their creative approach to the relevant media environment.
And do they generally at the moment?
I think we're seeing that a lot, actually. And you know, we've been very vocal going out into our advertisers and our agencies recently, sort of really trying to illustrate the way they can tailor that approach using different creative formats, using different beautiful vivid imagery and combining that with long form copy as well. You've got the time at the weekend to immerse yourself and wrap that brand message around the consumer, and it's a great way to do it.
Now, I absolutely sort of buy the logic of a sales message that says, you know, readers, when they've got a bit more time, are different readers to the way they behave in the week. You know, they're open to new messages, all of those things. I guess the second message you're giving is the convenience to the agency. In a chaotic agency, you've got the one point of contact. Which one is the one of the two that's going to kind of genuinely drive an increase in sales, do you think?
I think it's going to be a combination of the both, to be honest. I think the first step structurally is to make sure that we're just, you know, really simplifying our planning and buying processes for our agency partners. But ultimately, it comes down to the magazines and what that means to the consumers. And of course, when you look at the multitude of different media options that are available there, it's about understanding the role of newspaper inserted magazines in the context of the media landscape, and you know how we complement different media opportunities at the weekend.
Alistair, can I just ask, back in March when I first started at Mumbrella, I went to a Fairfax presentation about their magazines that they insert into their newspapers. It's called Defining Values. And their presentation pitted Fairfax magazines against newsstand magazines and basically argued why they're more compelling read than newsstand magazines. I just wondered, are you going after Fairfax as a competitor, or is your competitor a newsstand magazine?
Well, it's interesting. We actually compete with all media. And of course,
including some within your own stable.
Well,
then,
of course, there is always internal competition. But I think the reality is we compete for the consumer's mind. And of course, the consumer is out there picking up and reading and consuming lots of different types of media. I think to your point about newsstands, we don't see that at news magazines. We complement each other. In fact, we're very much going out there with the message that actually weekend magazines together with newsstand magazines can allow you to you know, really drive into different audience groups in a positive way. Look, at the end of the day, we also feel that a national readership of 5 million plus people every weekend is incredibly powerful. And of course, we haven't really talked about that in the past. And I think it's important if you contextualize that against other media like television, for example. You know, TV at the weekend, for, you know, if you take a national metro TV buy, you know, I think the highest rating TV program you can get will range somewhere between about 1.4 and 1.7 million readers at the weekend. So we're really driving
metro. Give them a chance. They're above 2 million once you add in regional.
But yeah, absolutely. But I'll take that, Tim. But I think you know, the reality is our 5 million plus readership at the weekend, you know, is a significant reach into the market. And of course, you know, no man is an island, as the saying goes. You know, we understand the complexities of media planning, and it's really about how we complement different media as well.
And you mentioned sayings. There are a lot of sayings in the presentation. I think it's the first time I've ever seen a presentation that includes the sayings both of Winnie the Pooh and Buddha.
Absolutely. Well, I think a beautiful combination. But I think we even weave John Lennon in there as well.
And in terms of the sort of brand values that Fairfax were pitting, they were saying that magazines inserted into newspapers are more authentic. And there's a couple of quotes here. They said, in their survey, they said that they quoted someone as saying, when I read this magazine, it reflects my need to get under the skin of news stories. So there's a sense that they were perhaps saying that newsstand magazines were perhaps fluffier and readers take magazines inserted into newspapers more seriously. I just wonder what...
I think each individual media has its merits and its own idiosyncrasies and characteristics. Certainly from newspaper inserted magazines point of view, I think, you know, people recognise them, they're loyal to them, they regularly consume them. And of course, those, you know, that regularity of consumption is incredibly important because it means consumers trust and are entertained and informed by them. So I think each media has its merits, and it's important you kind of play to your strength.
So certainly, within the portfolio, who's your favourite writer or columnist?
Oh, look, we've got so many. I mean,
there must be one that you turn. Well, who do you turn to first?
Well, you know, I do love John Loughlin in the Weekend Australian magazine. You know, being a bit of a foodie and drink aficionado, I do love all of his columns.
Next, could it be MasterChef overtaken by Australia's Got Talent?
So we're finally seeing another show take on MasterChef. Seven's Australia's Got Talent has proved it's got the legs to take on MasterChef, opening up something of a gap over the last few days. Also in the ratings, Monday saw the battle of the new guys, with the Amazing Race Australia debuting on Seven with 1.25 million. The guys from Little Britain with their new show Come Fly With Me on Nine, that picked up 1.48 million. And then there was the series return of Offspring, which had 927,000 for Ten. And then we had this.
Good evening and welcome to television.
From the very beginning, there's been unforgettable moments. Major events that made television history. Now, a new revolution is here. Get ready for a giant leap that will shake up Thursdays again.
Fitchy's ready to go.
It is freezing in the studio.
It feels like I've come straight from the Mardi Gras.
With Nick Malloy, Gian Rooney, Cavalli, Adam Gilchrist, and Charlie Sheen's best mate, Scott Dooley. Brand new Between the Lines starts Thursday, 8:30 on 9.
Thanks to Ubiquity for digging that one out for us. So, Tim, Between the Lines didn't quite reach moon landing proportions. Are you surprised?
So that ad, it's worth a play, although it's a week old, and by the time you listen to this podcast, the second episode will have just gone out. I think Nine have got a slight issue with their trailers in that it's almost tongue-in-cheek. They're so bombastic. You know, every single show is the most amazing show ever. And I just wonder whether the viewers have left behind that style of programming a bit now, this idea that people will just fall for it. to the extent that sometimes things are just promoted now and they just automatically assume that they're being lied to by the promotion. So the credibility is lost. So I just, this idea that a sports quiz was, you know, ever going to be like, you know, the first days of television and man walking on the moon, it's kind of ridiculous. Mm. And all the more embarrassing that when it doesn't, you know, doesn't rate terribly well. You know, in fairness, you know, just under 700,000 is low, but also, you know, it's obviously very male skewed. So for the right advertiser, you know, they're probably the right 700,000 people.
So just quickly, who do you think, which of the networks makes a good promo?
10, 10, 10.
Right.
10 does amazing promos.
What's the secret to a good one?
Oh, God. That's much harder, isn't it? Because, you know, everyone would wish they could do it. But, you know, the absolute classic example was Junior MasterChef, which the promo for that ran during the series finale of the previous series of MasterChef. And it created such buzz. They brought forward the air date of Junior MasterChef. You know, I remember I was with a group of friends watching the final, and, you know, one of the sort of women watched this Junior MasterChef, and it was just sort of this squeal of, oh, my ovaries have exploded, you know. It's just all these cute kids, and you know, and that was it. It was but you know, Ten are just they make really nice promos.
And I think also Ten do a lot of those first looks too. They're still doing it with MasterChef, even though it's already happening. They are.
Yeah, they did it with Glee.
Yep, they're doing it with Glee, previewing what, you know, kind of artists they're covering, and I think that's that anticipation that they do really well as well.
We've even seen previews for The Renovators, which must be weeks and weeks, well, probably months away before The Renovators launch. So, yeah, you know, 10 do very good promos.
We're coming on to it later, but just on promos, go back to where you came from SBS One, which is coming on SBS. I mean, that terrified me, and I'm sure to tune in. But so Alice... what's your pick of the bunch that we just mentioned earlier?
You may not be surprised to know, but I'm a bit of an Offspring fan. I think right. I'm kind of in the demographic that they'd certainly be going for. I was trying to convince my partner that he should watch it, and he wasn't convinced, so I ended up watching it in the bedroom. But, you know, I think 10 perhaps would have been hoping to crack the million mark with them, but they were certainly up against some pretty stiff competition. Mm. But, you know, it was a movie-length episode. I think the first episode, as you said, of that picked up 927,000. So, yeah, I against those guys, I think, you know, they did pretty well. It'll be interesting to see what happens this coming Monday.
Yeah, now I watched with Hope Come Fly With Me on 9. I wasn't a fan of Little Britain, but I really wanted this to be good. I didn't enjoy it, though. I
thought, well, you're
fairly,
in a minority, though,
fairly
aren't you?
Weak. Yeah, I mean, it's one a great debut, million. 1.5 yeah. million. So, Tim, what do you think?
Well, some of the controversy around it before it aired was around the fact that the regional affiliates took the decision not to air it because they thought it was maybe a bit cheeky for their audience.
Cheeky in what way?
Well, you know, a bit too risque. Which clearly, now that it is rated so well, they've had to reverse their decision, and it is going to air from next week, you know, across, you know, Wynn and the rest of the regional network. But yeah, that was actually probably a helpful bit of controversy for making people tune in, and it was quite amusing to see. I think it was Matt Lucas sort of tweeting overnight when it aired, you know, thanks for saying the nice things, those of you who are sophisticated enough to be allowed to watch. So there was a little bit of a dig, but you know, that was a really good result. I mean, for all of the show debuts for 9 in the last couple of months, that's got to have been the most successful one. There've been a few disappointments along the line too.
Yes, Alice, did you see that? Did you see Come Fly With Me?
No, to be honest, I wasn't interested purely because I didn't like Little Britain. So that kind of turned it off for me. While we're on the comedies, Angry Boys was on last night, being Wednesday night.
Rated it, liked it.
I only caught the end, but it certainly is, I guess, turning up the heat a little bit on the controversy. I certainly wasn't shocked or, you know, unimpressed by it, but it was certainly pushing boundaries as opposed to the first episode.
So I didn't see it, but they introduced the rapper, didn't they?
They did. Who's who?
It's like a bit of a sort of pastiche of a black Eminem, really. Isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. And look, I think he does it quite well. But I mean, there was a couple of songs something about pooing on you was one of the songs. And yeah, I don't know, I excuse the pun, but a little bit of toilet humour, I thought, last night. But I don't know, I think the more you get to know all these characters, I guess the more you get to like them. I guess that's the aim.
So next, SBS changes digital advertising approach, geographically speaking.
So a tougher telly sell at the moment is SBS, which has seen a lot of its territory eroded by the digital channels. As a result, they're taking something of a new sales approach. Robin, you've been chatting to them this week.
Yeah, so I went along to the launch yesterday, I think it was, and there was the National Sales Director, Mark Fairhurst, who was talking about, I was really impressed. He was very candid. We sat down to a nice breakfast and he said, look, things...
Were you impressed by the nice breakfast or by what he had to say?
Both, yes, because he absolutely is very candid and open.
I think you were in the media hangout of the Bambini Trust wine bar, weren't you?
That's right, yeah.
Surrounded by ACP folk, I should think.
Yes, that's right. So he described a market that was nervous. I think that they've got a big job on their hands. The big advertising categories that are suffering for them, one is retail, another is automotive. They've got a lot of Japanese car brands, obviously because of the tsunami, are not spending.
But the other, I guess their other big thing was they were always easily the fourth commercial channel. Mm-hmm. And suddenly with the digital channels jumping past them, which I guess is an extra new pressure for them as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He did say, and I did ask him, he said that, look, we're not dropping our pants on price, which I think is a temptation. He said that the volume of inventory going through SBS after the launch of SBS 2 has tripled.
So why tripled? Because is there more inventory on SBS 2 than there is on SBS 1 then?
Well, perhaps it's including some online elements as well, but obviously the temptation is there. So much inventory to shift quickly, you drop price. I was impressed with the way that they're revamping their offering, especially on SBS 2. They're allowing advertisers to target geographically soon, which they hope will increase revenue by about 10%.
Well, while we're talking SBS, they've also started promoting what sounds like a relatively provocative documentary, Go Back to Where You Came From. Let's have a listen.
When the boat crashed coming into Christmas Island, I thought, serve your bastards right. I think that we have the capacity to take perhaps more refugees.
Six ordinary Australians will experience a journey you could never imagine.
Oh, you're shitting me.
No.
I don't want to hear about it anymore.
Ignore it.
I don't want to listen to you.
Water coming in everywhere down here.
The life-risking journey in reverse of a refugee.
Mate, we're going under.
How desperate do you get to put your children on something like this?
What? Someone's just been arrested there by the looks of it. There's people running everywhere.
I had no idea it was going to be this full on.
Unstaged, unscripted.
I think this is good. They should be doing this in Australia.
Is this serious?
You're asking us to go to Iraq?
I don't know if it makes me feel safer or just more terrified.
When you see all this stuff on TV and to actually be here,
sometimes I've got to pinch myself and say, what the hell's going on?
It makes me feel a bit helpless. It makes me feel a bit hypocritical. I can hope that this story might change things.
From that moment, I was very nervous. I mean, travelling into town, you've got razor wire everywhere.
I'm going home, I ain't staying here. I'm not no refugee.
Take care of your
money.
Once it is stolen, cannot replace them.
Are you giving me
control?
Yeah. Spacious.
I don't think I can eat this.
I can't see any way that I can get through this.
I'm a bit terrified. It's not my country and I'm not familiar of any of this.
A world first 3-day television event.
It's not something new, the fact that there's refugees. When someone works out the answer, I'm sure they'll probably win a Nobel Peace Prize.
Now, by being here and seeing all this, it doesn't give you a lot of hope. I can't imagine life like this.
Go back to where you came from, June 19 to 21 on SBS One.
So that's SBS, and that show aims to challenge preconceived notions about refugees and asylum seekers, and that starts next month. Robin, you going to tune in for that one?
Yeah, just because I was, as I said earlier on, terrified by the promo. I'd be intrigued to see how it plays out. This certainly is no show that Tourism Australia would like to go on air, I don't think. But I think compelling viewing. I did ask whether any advertisers have been sort of irked by it or put off by it, but they said no, the appetite from advertisers for this show has been really strong. So
Alice,
yeah, good luck to them.
One for you, Alice.
Yeah, I'm with Robin. I'm really intrigued. I absolutely cringed from the first moment the start of the ad with the woman. So you know, I want to watch it as an Aussie. I'd like to see how these other Aussies handle the situations.
Next, Thirsty Camel's hump campaign ban.
To advertise with one of the top 10 most loved brands in Australia, visit advertise.ebay.com.au.
We saw a campaign devised by Melbourne agency 2020 a couple of months ago for Thirsty Camel bottle shops. The campaign saw stickers reading hump being posted on various signs around the city. For example, instead of reading casual parking, the sign would read casual humping. A couple of months down the track and the Advertising Standards Bureau has pulled the Bottle-O's online ad because it encourages vandalism of road safety signs, which could have serious implications for public safety. The agency has since reposted another video with hump digitally placed across the original hump sticker. So, Alice, what do you think? A bit over the top?
Oh, yeah. You know, the safety thing, if a giveaway sign has hump over it, or this is going to encourage graffiti any more than anything else is. And the agency did say at the time, I believe, that they took the stickers down as soon as they'd taken the photos. So, I don't know.
Yeah, but ironically, the campaign prompted a graffiti artist in Melbourne to stick stickers all over Thirsty Camel bottle shops. Response. So it's sort of, I was sort of struck by what Fish Rutherford, who's the creative director at 2020, said. He's saying, look,
Fish,
you know,
Rutherford, did you say?
Yes, that's his name, F-Y-S-H,
okay.
Fish Rutherford.
Do you think he was born with that name, or...?
Perhaps, who knows? But he did say in a press release sent to us, you know, this ad would not provoke vandalism. And then in a conversation I had with him, he said, well, actually, yeah, 30 camel bottle shops have been vandalised as a result of the campaign. So.
I've got half a feeling as well. Weren't there a couple of complaints about the hump ads? And one of them was cleared and one of them was found
The video was banned because it incited vandalism. But a poster and a billboard were complaints against them were dismissed. They were not for, sexual connotations rather than vandalism.
Right, okay. So,
next, Maxim Exposure for new men's mag in Oz.
Now, you may have heard of men's title Maxim magazine. We learned this week that it's going to launch in Australia and New Zealand with the content a mix of local and US material. I think the UK edition of Maxim, where it first leapt to life, is now no more. It's shuffled off to online only, as so many titles do. And what's interesting about the launch in Australia is it comes not that long after the closure of Alpha and of Ralph and of Sport and Style, which was the Fairfax sort of male focused magazine insert, which some people would say suggests that the men's mag category is slowly dying. Robin, you had a chat to the new publishers, the people who've licensed it. Are they feeling bullish?
Yeah, Nuclear Media. I was impressed by what the publisher was saying. But I think it's the launch is polarising opinion. It's either, is this brave or is this foolish? And I think the strategy is very much, look, guys, let's do this on the cheap. There's a lot of freelancers. It's a slimline team. But I think that there's a good chance that sort of soft porn meets lads gags formula may actually work. Especially perhaps for the younger demographic. The comments in the comment stream were pretty cynical. One saying, you know, if this makes it to the second issue, I'll eat my hat sort of thing. But I think it'll actually work.
Next, more changes at Fairfax.
You're listening to the Mumbrella Cast. For more on all of these stories, visit mumbrella.com.au. Fairfax is proving to be quite the story churner of late, with another two news items on Mumbrella this week. Firstly, we heard that it was putting its radio stations, which include Melbourne's 3AW and Sydney's 2UE, up for sale. CEO Greg Highwood said the move was spurred on by strong expressions of interest and was part of the ongoing review of opportunities to maximise shareholder value. The second was the promotion of digital sales boss Ed Harrison to Metro Commercial Director. This, of course, follows Jack Matthews' promotion in February, which saw him move on from Fairfax Digital to the Metro division. So, Tim, do you think it matters that Metro is headed up by two people who have never worked in newspapers?
Symbolically, yes. In the day-to-day, no. I mean, they're both respected operators. I guess what we are seeing slightly is a takeover by the digital boys of the newspaper. You know, so we've now got of the newspapers. So we've now got Jack Matthews, who as you say used to run the digital operation. Now, the top guy across both the Herald and the Age and in print and online, and then his go-to man for sales is going to be Ed Harrison, who actually came, you know, most recently before being at Fairfax Digital was with JC Decaux, outdoor firm, and if I remember rightly, he started his career in magazine sales. So you know, at least he's done print, if not newspapers. So both, to all intents, by the market, by colleagues, respected as good operators. But symbolically, you know, the idea that these guys are looking over two of the great papers of Australia, or in fact the world, have you know, never before gone down to the press and plucked tomorrow morning's edition off the press and gone home with it tucked under their arm, is a little bit sad at the same time, isn't it? Mm.
On the radio, on the sale of the radio stations, what do you think this says about the radio market? And what do you think it says about Fairfax? You know, it's an 8% medium. Presumably it's fairly lucrative. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, Fairfax have sort of made the argument that, first of all, it's because they've had strong interest. So they, I guess your duty to your shareholder, if you get strong interest, is to try and assess what it's worth. So that seems to be the first bit. They've almost argued got KPMG in to give them a bit of advice on what they could get for it. A couple of interesting rumours going around. One of them is that John Singleton might be interested through the Macquarie Radio Group, which you know, is the market leader by some way in Sydney. So that would that would sort of, you know, why would they need it in Sydney? But they're not the market leader in Melbourne. That's the big, you know, that's the big question. They you know, they did the joint venture of MTR, which hasn't gone terribly well so far. So that it would be tempting for them. Or the other entertaining rumour, which was reported, I think, in News Limited, was that Harold Mitchell might be putting together a consortium. Harold Mitchell runs Aegis Media in this part of the world. And also, kind of interestingly, and I don't think the Australian pointed it out, is Fairfax is also his client. Mitchell's looks after Fairfax, so Fairfax's media buying. So
could he be both media buyer and seller?
Well, it's an interesting question. It happens in other parts of the world, but yeah, it would certainly raise some questions, wouldn't it? One of those things that in Australia, I think people would probably find a way. But it sort of seems more, perhaps more likely that you know, Singo might come after it a bit harder.
Next, private parts, Facebook and stealing content.
With more than 94.5 million active users globally, eBay is the world's largest online marketplace. Visit advertise.ebay.com.au.
Sydney Morning Herald journalist Ben Grubb was in the headlines this week after he was arrested by Queensland police after he wrote a news story about Facebook vulnerabilities while covering a conference on IT security.
All right, now apart from that interview, what we're going to have to do, I'm afraid, Ben, is we're going to be taking possession of your iPad. We're going to be seizing it under legislation here in Queensland.
And what legislation is that?
Okay, we're governed by the Police Powers and Responsibilities Act.
Yeah, and
And we have the power to seize property that we believe may contain evidence of the commission of an offence.
Okay. Now, I work, and my iPad is my working device. I'm a journalist.
Sure.
I have rights to keep my sources close.
Mm-hmm.
Under what legislation are you prepared to take my iPad away from me under, and do I have to give you the password?
Okay. The legislation is the Police Powers and Responsibilities Act, and if you wish, we can tell you the exact section number and the subsection. But we have a power generally under the Police Powers and Responsibilities Act to seize evidence that we believe, that we reasonably believe, contains evidence of the commission of an offence. Now, we reasonably believe that on your iPad is recorded evidence of the commission of an offence, and therefore we are going to seize your iPad to examine it forensically.
Yep. I need to go back to work tomorrow. This is my iPad. I don't want to do that.
Okay, well, this is not, okay, I am now going to tell you that you are now under arrest, okay, in relation to the receiving of unlawfully obtained property okay? And we are now seizing your iPad. So if you can please hand your iPad over to us.
Now, before I do that, lawyers, all of that, I would like to seek legal advice before you do what you say you are doing.
Okay.
Because I feel that I now am being unfairly treated.
Okay. Well, all right. Now I will tell you. I have placed you under arrest. Okay. You are physically under arrest now. You are not free to leave now. I will allow you to make a phone call. However, before you do that, I'll ask you to put the iPad on the desk.
Yep.
Okay. And not touch it. We will not touch it while you make a phone call. But we are going to remain present to you.
Yep.
Okay.
The story was based around a demonstration by a security expert, which showed how he could access photographs of another security consultant's wife. Ben was asked to help the police with their inquiries and happily recorded the moment when he was arrested. He was later released, but the police have said that receiving a Facebook photo is a bit like receiving a stolen TV. Fortunately, there's a clip of this one as well. This is Detective Superintendent Brian Hay.
Protect that data. Now, the Queensland Police going to do anything to communicate with Facebook?
Yeah, you shouldn't only focus on, obviously, clearly you're focusing on the information you know, but obviously we have more information, and I can assure you that other actions have been introduced from the outset. So that's all I'll say about it.
But in general, with a disclosure, to what level does Queensland Police hold the individual releasing the disclosure responsible as opposed to holding the company responsible?
There are other issues involved. This isn't about release of information. This is, you know, this one element. Again, I don't want to go into it. But for example, if I could give you an analogy, and we don't talk about the online crime environment. Someone breaks into a house and they steal a TV and they give that TV to you and you know that TV is stolen and you apply to your own use. Awesome.
And credit goes to Stilgherian for grabbing that, which was a sort of slightly off the cuff comment at the start of the press conference, which still was live streaming, while I got the sense that listening to the rest of the mainstream media was still setting up. So a nice little social media scoop there. Robin, were you aware that borrowing Facebook pictures was potentially a crime?
Well, absolutely not. At face value, it seems that the guys turned up to a conference, reported on it, and ended up in jail, being arrested through no fault of his own, really. I'm sure he's really surprised about it. I think that the big part of the story that's sort of hit me is the way that how badly the police have handled the media situation. They said that they've issued an apology on their Facebook page. I'm not sure if they had that, but last time I looked, that there was nothing to be seen on their Facebook
yes,
page.
Yes, there were various things. First of all, there was you had Ben Grubb tweeting that he'd been arrested. Then you had Queensland Police tweeting that, no, he hasn't been arrested. Then you had Queensland Police tweeting, actually, are bad.
Oh,
he has. That was the funniest thing. The phrase "are bad." Ah, thanks, police. And then yes, you know, I rang them up for the comment. They were like, "Well, we're going to, you know, put our response up on the Facebook page later." As far as I could see, they never did. But then, of course, there was that slightly disastrous press conference where there was some talking off the cuff going on. I was also amused that the superintendent also claimed that he had excellent relationships with most of Australia's journalists, which I don't know how many are employed in Australia, but I'm obviously in the minority and never having met or dealt with this chap.
Do you think that this story has set any sort of precedent for the way journalists will report on not just internet security, but do you think journalists would be more wary?
I'd hope not. I mean, I think this is going to be Ben's making, isn't it? He's just, you know, it's an absolute badge of honour to be, you know, arrested for something that you've reported when it's true, you know. So, no, I mean, you know, good on Ben. I think, yeah, the police will just kind of, on this one, sort of quietly slink away, I suspect.
Do you think there's anything that the police should have done differently? Obviously, they made a litany of errors, but any sort of, if they could repeat that, if they could sort of live through the situation again, what they would have done differently?
I suppose one of the questions is, you know, and again, one of the points made in the press conference is journalists aren't above the law. The rather odd thing was it seemed like he was being interviewed almost as an expert advisor who was present, like a witness. So certainly on the face of it, the decision to arrest him, which may have been because they, and this is where I start speculating. To me, it may have been, I suspect that he may have had an audio recording of the presentation on his iPad
and they decided they wanted to get at the recording and the presentation, perhaps on suspicion that a crime had been committed. Probably they were within the law to do that. There are shield laws. It would be an interesting test of them. At the time of this discussion, I don't think the union has had a say yet. In fact, that might be one to kind of talk to them this week, actually. But yeah, president, no, I sincerely hope not. Well, that's all we have time for today. Special thanks to News Magazine's Alastair McEwen.
Thank you very much, Tim.
And Mumbrella's Robin Hicks.
Cheers, Tim.
And Alice Telikovsky.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks also to CBS Interactive for the studio. Until next week, toodle-pip.